Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's been 2 days just about since John Kerry conceded the presidential election to President Bush, but there are some people who think he shouldn't have done it. There's an article being circulated around the web by the journalist Craig Pallast of Salon.com and Harper's, who takes the position that Kerry won, and he says, here are the facts. I know you don't want to hear it. You can't face one more hung Chad, but I don't have a choice. As a journalist examining that messy sausage called American democracy, it's my job to tell you who got the most votes in the deciding states. Tuesday in Ohio and New Mexico, it was John Kerry, says Pallast. Here's one piece of evidence. He says the Cleveland Plain Dealer reports there are a total of 247,000 plus votes not counted in Ohio. If you add the 92,000 discarded votes plus the 155,000 provisional ballots, and let's see, on the left website, tompaine.com, it says there is no indication that Pallast's hypothesis will be tested because only the provisional ballots are being counted. Now, Pallast says, although the exit polls show that most voters in Ohio punched cards for Kerry Edwards, thousands of these votes were simply not recorded. This was predictable, and it was predicted, it says. And once again, at the heart of the Ohio uncounted vote game, I'm sorry to report, says Greg Pallast, hanging chads and pregnant chads, plus some other ballot tricks, old and new. And he says the election in Ohio was not decided by the voters, but by something called spoilage. Typically in the United States, about 3% of the vote is voided, just thrown away, not recorded. When the bobblehead boobs on the tube tell you Ohio or any state was won by 51% to 49%, don't you believe it? It has never happened in the United States because the total never reaches a neat 100%. And not all votes spoil equally. Most of those votes, say every official report, come from African-American and minority precincts. We saw this in Florida in 2000, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, first and foremost, Kerry was had by chads. But the Democrat wasn't punched out by punch cards alone. There were also the challenges. That's a polite word for the Republican Party of Ohio's use of an old Ku Klux Klan technique, the attempt to block thousands of voters of color at the polls. In Ohio, Wisconsin, and Florida, the GOP laid plans for poll workers to ambush citizens under arcane laws almost never used, allowing party-designated poll watchers to finger individual voters and demand that they be denied a ballot. Now, of course, the courts went back and forth on the challengers, and virtually all the media reports out of Ohio on Tuesday said that there were not major incidents of intimidation or vote suppression, but it's interesting that, at least in some circles, this Greg Pallast article and some others like it are still making the rounds. We've been trying to get Greg to come back on the show this morning. So far, we haven't been able to get in touch with him. We still may, and we will, however, speak with Miles Rappaport. He's president of the think tank Demos and a former Connecticut Secretary of State. Demos has been very active during this election campaign in keeping an eye on the honesty of the voting system. And though not necessarily taking a position on the Greg Pallast article, Demos certainly says there were problems with the vote nationwide, which should not be ignored and not be swept under the rug and which need to be fixed by the time the next election comes around. So, Miles Rappaport, welcome to WNYC. Thank you very much for coming on with us.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And so, first, I want you to tell us what you know about Greg Pallast's theory, while we're still trying to reach him, and as someone who takes the whole larger question of voting irregularity seriously, how serious a thing you think this may be or have been in the state of Ohio?
Well, I think that I'm very troubled by the premature celebration of the fact that there, you know, that our democracy worked well and our processes worked well. Clearly, there wasn't a kind of total meltdown as some people had feared. But I think there is an accumulation of a lot of problems that that really need to be rectified. Now, whether they would have changed the Ohio vote or not is very hard to say, and Greg is probably right that we'll never really find out. But there's no question that what they do is point to the serious need for ongoing reform of the machinery and the process of the elections. And there are dozens of examples in Ohio and elsewhere where things happened that shouldn't have happened.
A related question is, were the exit polls necessarily wrong, or was the actual vote count perhaps wrong? We've heard so much about how the exit polls were wrong, but, you know, the corollary hypothesis here is that if so many votes got uncounted or spoiled and thrown out, as the Palast article describes, is it possible that the exit polls correctly recorded the percentage of people who went in intending to vote for one candidate or another, and the actual vote count just doesn't reflect it?
Well, there's certainly an ongoing debate about whether those exit polls were accurate or inaccurate, and some, you know, they're different exit polls, obviously, and some were more and some were less. But I think that the issue of spoilage that Greg is talking about, and the other issues that have come up in Ohio and elsewhere, really point to the need for more reform. Just a quick list: many polling places opened up late. In many cases, absentee ballots that voters had requested never got to them. People were required to vote on provisional ballots, and in many cases, the polling places ran out of the provisional ballots. The voter identification requirements that are new under the Help America Vote Act were applied more stringently in some places than in others. There were a number of voting machine failures on the electronic machines as well as the old-fashioned machines. And there was a general understaffing of the polling places. The recruitment of poll workers lagged way behind what was really necessary. I mean, people have commented that the long lines of people waiting to vote in the rain in Ohio was a sign of democracy working because people were determined. Well, I give those voters a lot of credit for doing that and being so determined, but the existence of the lines is an indication that the system is not handling those voters properly as they're coming in.
Do you have any idea why, if there's a chance that Palast's numbers are accurate, if his raw numbers are accurate, that 247,000-plus votes were not counted and Bush's official margin of victory was 136,000, if Kerry knew that, and if he did know it, why he made the decision not to fight?
Well, I can only say what I have seen in the public press, and that thinking about the focusing on the provisional ballots, if there were probably about 175,000 provisional ballots cast in Ohio.
Yes, forgive me. I'm giving you I under reported that number. What all of the things that Palast lists adds up to 247,000 votes not counted in Ohio, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, plus 92,000 discarded votes, plus the 155,000 provisional ballots. So that's, you know, you're getting close to 500,000 votes there.
Right. I mean, it's obvious that the Kerry campaign made the calculation that it was not going to change, and that going through 2 or 3 weeks of recounting was unlikely to change the outcome. You know, I think it's hard to second guess it. I do think that a thorough audit of the votes, that all of the votes ought to be counted, as John Edwards said on election night, both the provisional ballots and a recheck of the votes. But I think what's more important, in a way, going forward from here, is that the system is badly in need of reform, and those people who care about our democracy should not want this to happen, and should want to make sure that in the future we have better machinery, more well-trained poll workers, less spoilage of the votes, and all that is possible with the commitment and the resources necessary to make it happen.
This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. We're talking about how good the vote was on Election Day, and talking about lingering questions, at least in some quarters, over who really did or at least might have won Ohio, particularly this Greg Palast article that's been making its way around the web. Palast, a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, investigator for the BBC Television's Newsnight and others, definitely a left-leaning journalist, but one who's doing numbers, and concludes that if all the votes had been counted, Kerry probably would have won. And we're talking about it with Miles Rappaport, president of the think tank Demos, which is also concerned in more general terms about the quality of the vote, and saying that the United States should not stop after 2004 in improving the voting system. He was also a former Connecticut Secretary of State. And also joining us now is Bill Cohen. He's the longtime Ohio Public Radio TV, Public Radio and TV State House Bureau Chief. He's in Columbus. Bill, hello from New York. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Is this Palast article or anything like it making the rounds in the Buckeye State?
Well, I just heard about it this morning, actually, when your folks called. So I have to plead ignorance about it. And let me tell you, I'm not an elections expert. This stuff is very complex, and I don't claim to understand all of it. But I will tell you, look, Bush won Ohio officially or unofficially by 136,000 votes, and I certainly understand that there are something like 155,000 provisional ballots still out there that need to be counted. But let's remember what a federal court ruled a week or two ago. The court ruled that, yeah, you can vote provisional ballots, but if you are not in your right precinct, your vote won't count. That was the same stand that Ohio's top elections official took, Secretary of State Ken Blackwell. And he's very controversial, but a federal appeals court agreed with him. And that means, yeah, you will count those 155,000 provisional ballots, but first of all, not all of them would go to Kerry, and second of all, a lot of them may be thrown out because people did not vote in the right precinct. I think that's one reason John Kerry did concede. His lawyers told him he would have a tough time winning a huge chunk of those provisional ballots.
Do you think Palast's numbers are right? He says there were a total of 247,000 votes not counted in Ohio, 92,000 discarded votes considered spoiled votes by hanging chad problems and things like that, plus 155,000 provisional ballots not yet counted.
Well, I don't know if those numbers are right, but as I just said, that 155,000 provisional ballots, some of those may not count at all and shouldn't be counted, according to the courts, because people didn't vote in the right precincts. And second of all, no one can claim that all those votes are going to wind up in Kerry's column. The 92,000 discarded votes, they are discarded for at least in some people's eyes, good reason. I was at a polling place waiting to vote at 6:30 in the morning. Somebody had voted. This was where you push a TV screen, a computer screen, to show who you want to vote for. And then the last thing you have to do after you punch all those individual race buttons, you have to punch a final button that says vote, and that records all your votes. Well, this person left the voting machine and left and did not punch that final vote button. And people went out and ran out into the street to try to find the person. They couldn't, and so that person's vote was voided. That's the rule. That person's vote is void, and that person's vote should be discarded, at least the way the rules read right now.
Palast's theory is that since those votes would be predominantly, or at least disproportionately, in urban and African-American areas of the state, it would indicate a sort of technological bias in the system away from the Democrat. What do you think of that?
I think that's probably a pretty good argument. More of the mistakes perhaps are made in the urban areas, and they would tend to vote for Democrats. But I'm just saying, under the current rules, those are the rules, and that's what you have to play by. I guess if you want to argue, are the rules unfair, should they be changed, well, that's a whole other argument. That argument can start today, and you can change election law. If you've got the votes in the legislature, or you've got a Democrat-leaning Secretary of State, or you've got some Democrats in key federal courtships.
Bill, do you? Miles Rappaport, go ahead.
Just a quick point. Ironically, the problems that Palast points out in this article took place on the punch card ballots, and the punch card ballots in Ohio were used because so many questions were raised about the electronic voting machines. Now, the electronic voting machines generally people do find easier to use and have less of a spoilage rate.
Yes, I think you're right. And yet, I think something like 65 or 70 counties in Ohio don't use the electronic. They still use the old punch method.
Right, because so far the confidence in those machines has not been generated, and particularly in Ohio, where the Diebold chairman made that comment about delivering the state for Bush.
Have you heard any allegations of carry votes on the touchscreen electronic voting machines converting to Bush votes or anything like that?
I haven't heard that, although we did get a report today on the Associated Press that says a computer error with a voting machine cartridge gave President Bush nearly 4,000 extra votes in a precinct in the Columbus suburb of Gahanna. And so I guess you got to subtract almost 4,000 votes from the Bush column right now.
Now, explain that a little more. How would that error have taken place?
Well, I don't know. I'm just reading the report here. They say, the elections official here in Franklin County said after the precinct closed, a cartridge from one of three voting machines at the polling place generated a faulty number at a computerized reading station. So I guess that shows you how now the touchscreen voting machines aren't infallible either.
And not to say that all the errors would have gone in Bush's direction, but if that computer error was discovered, one wonders how many computer errors have gone undiscovered.
That's a good point. I'll tell you, we interviewed an OSU law professor yesterday or the day before. Actually, it's all blending together in my mind here. But he was saying that he thought John Kerry was right to concede because Kerry would have had to hit, as he put it, three home runs. First, he would have had to pick up votes in a recount. Second of all, he would have had to pick up some votes among the provisional ballots. And then he would have also had to do something which would have really been tough for him to do, and that is filed some kind of court suit that would have said, look, we had huge lines in Ohio. Some people waited 1 hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, and some people may have gone to those polling places and said, look, I'm not going to stay here for 5 hours and to vote. I'm going home.
Mm-hmm.
The Kerry's folks would have had to find hundreds of those folks.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way convinced the judge that they needed to be allowed to vote all over again. They were discouraged unfairly from voting, and it crossed some legal threshold. And at least this OSU law professor says that that's just three home runs, that it would have been just impossible, virtually impossible for Kerry to win.
Well,
although, of course, it brings up, they all bring up very good points about the rules that we run elections by.
And that is where we have to leave it for today. Ohio Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Bill Cohen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Miles Rappaport, president of the think tank DMOST. We'll have you back to talk about where we go from here in the election system. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
WNYC is a media sponsor of the Gay Life Expo, this weekend at the Jacob Javits Convention Center. Sunday's special guest star is Ms. Jennifer Holliday. More information at gaylifeexpo.com.
By the way, for those of you who were calling in to ask where you could read the Palast article, because we didn't give the website earlier, we found it on tompaine.com. This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. Some upcoming programs next week. Monday, we will begin the week, as we have all year before the election, with our Monday morning politics segments. This week, Reverend Al Sharpton and a guest we're still confirming from the Republican side. On Tuesday, one of the world's most prominent scientists, biologist Richard Dawkins, on the latest discoveries in the field of evolution. Thursday, music critic Kala Fasane on the culturally biased attitude known as rockism. And a lot more next week. Of course, including how President Bush intends to use his political capital.